Hello and welcome to Screams and Streams, the podcast that looks at the best and worst horror movies as rated on Rotten Tomatoes from 1970 onwards. I'm your host, Chad Campbell, and with me is my co-host,
Mike Caron.
Before we get to today's film, we'd like to invite you to check us out on Instagram. Our handle is at ScreamStreamPod, and check out our website, ScreamsAndStreams.com. Just a warning, in the podcast, we do jump around in the plot as we talk about the film. If you don't like spoilers, we recommend you stop listening now, check out the film, and then rejoin us for our discussion. Today, we are looking at Ovidio G. Asinaitis's 1977 film, Tentacles. It scored 0% on Rotten Tomatoes, and let's get into it. Mike is going to give us our summary.
In my mind, it's just Jaws with an octopus.
Right.
But the IMDb summary is simply a mutated giant octopus wreaks havoc on a California seaside community.
Ooh. Our first category is first impressions. I'm going to kick us off. And Mike, you hit the nail on the head with that one. Jaws. It's their attempt at a Jaws type film, much like Under Siege was an attempt at Die Hard on the sea.
Yeah.
This one is trying to do Jaws just with a different beast, and it's poorly done. It is, I don't know, right from the beginning, the opening shot, the taxi driver is taking this guy into this town and he's adjusting this knob over and over and over again, and yet nothing is changing. And you don't see any faces, and when the guy comes out of the taxi cab, he's walking, you still don't see a face. I don't know, the acting is poor, the writing is bad, the lines are, I don't know what else to say. It's just a poorly done film that tries to be Jaws but just misses the mark on every level.
Yeah, it's a carbon copy of a carbon copy.
Yeah. So that was my first impression. It just missed the mark for me. I don't think it deserves zero, but it's pretty darn close.
Yeah, it's it's hard to find the value in this film. For me, I just kept feeling like I was watching like a bad Magnum PI episode for a lot of it. It had the same tone, the same color, right, almost the same music as one of those bad 1970s drama TV series.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's really almost my whole first impression.
Well, and then middle of the way, like they're doing this investigation about what could possibly be killing these people. And then mid movie, it just takes a shift and there's no more investigation. Like the reporter's right out of it.
Yeah.
We'll get to this later. Yeah. But yeah, it's weird.
The main character, one of the title credited people, gone. Explanation.
Yeah. Just not around anymore.
Just on the topic of the copying, like Asinaitis is known for this. He's got a 1974 film about a pregnant woman that's possessed by the devil.
Oh.
So there's that ripoff of Exorcist. This came out shortly after Jaws. And then he was also the one who wrote The Visitor, which was sort of like an antichrist figure
type
movie that came out after The Omen. So he made his bread and butter on
copying other people's films,
replicating poorly and becoming the cult status. I don't think he was trying to be a cult status director.
Right.
He probably thought he was making gold. I don't know.
It's tough. Like I say, with the acting, just a lot of the lines seemed almost like English versions of anime.
Right.
Where it's all run together. They're trying to get through the paragraph as quick as possible. Mm-hmm. And then at the end, they do an exclamation point that is like, we're going to go to the store. Uh-huh. So it's, I don't know. It just very, it's a bad line reading, but it was, or example, but it's exactly how it went for me.
It was on point.
I just watched it and I said, oh, why don't they slow this down a little bit? These guys are just chewing up this scene.
Well, and I think that's the problem with dubbed films is maybe when they were shooting it, they're like, oh, we didn't quite get the line delivery, but we're going to dub it later. But when they're doing the ADR, they had to time it to the mouth movement. They're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You got to get through this sentence quick.
Yeah. And he laughs. So you got to throw a laugh in there too. Ha 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 ha. It's just, I don't know, man. It's tough to watch stuff like that. Dubbed movies are tough to watch.
Yeah. There's also something to be said, period, about Italian dubbed films.
Yes.
It seems they're the worst, where it's all English speaking actors and yet they still feel they need to dub them afterwards.
I know. It doesn't make any sense to me. And it just looks and feels fake.
Yeah.
And right away you're taken out of the film.
Yeah.
So those were our first impressions. So I think we've beat that dead horse.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So now we're going to move on into tropes. The Hall of Shame. Mike's going to kick us off with this one.
My first one out the gate is, and I liked it because there was no backstory to it or whatever, but the peg leg sea captain. I was actually impressed. I guess it was a guy with an amputated leg or something, because it didn't look like it was taped up, but it was just, I've never seen an actual peg leg in a modern film.
No, neither had I. And so I actually loved that. I put on here an actual peg leg pirate. Oh my God. Yeah. My first trope is an animal has a hunger that can never be satiated.
Right.
So this octopus has had the taste of blood and now just cannot be stopped. So that was my trope, my first one anyways.
And I just love how it's not just, I don't know, we'll get into this later, but you know, it's not just that it's an animal that's attacking. It has to have been affected in some way, because of course people would be like, well, no predator just kills for the sake of killing. So we got to justify it through this, like the ultrasonic frequencies have disrupted it or something.
Yes. And that's one of my other ones.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay. We can jump into that now, is because a big corporation is drilling a ton or making a tunnel, and it's caused this mutation of this octopus, and now this octopus is mad and coming around and killing everybody. But the big corporation comes in and it causes mutation.
Yeah.
I was surprised we didn't see toxic waste in there or something to that effect, right?
Yeah, there was the whole environmental data was manipulated and hidden. And
All right, so why don't you give us your second one there, Mike?
It's just a scene where they're in the water and it's the two gentlemen from the Oceanographic Institute and Will Gleason, who's sort of the orca trainer that comes into play later. They're on a boat and they go into the water and we have the one gentleman swimming and the camera sneaks up behind it. So you think it's the monster because we've seen the tentacles in the coral.
Right.
But no, it's just the friend scaring him. Ha ha.
Yes. Yeah.
And what's funny is, like, I wrote it down the first time it happened. I was like, oh, Jesus, this is so cheesy, so obvious.
Yeah.
But then they do it again.
I wrote that down too. I said, they do the same joke twice. I said, what is going on?
And there's a bit of that in this film where it's like, it was totally unnecessary and didn't need to be in there, but they threw it in.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's my next one.
My other one is, vehicle passes by and the object is gone. The object is being focused on. So at the beginning of this scene, this woman is doing this horrific baby talk to her child and she runs across the road to talk to a friend and there's an over the shoulder shot. The camera's kind of focusing on the child that she's just abandoned by the seashore and she's talking to her friend. And then all of a sudden this big bus passes by and then the child is gone.
I found that scene so irritating because you see it coming a mile away.
Oh, yes.
You know, at some point the view of the baby's going to be blocked and it's going to be gone. So there's no tension built up. And we're going to get to the score later, but also the music in that scene isn't establishing any sort of threat is coming.
No, you're just hearing the cars go by.
And bad dialogue of like, oh, how are things going? And one of my lines coming up was from that scene. And so every time a car would pass, I'm like, oh, is this one? No, kid hasn't disappeared yet. Oh, is this one? Oh, no.
That's exactly it. The only tension is when is it going to happen? It's not if it's going to happen, right? So you see three cars pass and then finally the bus goes by and you're like, okay, this has got to be it because it's an extended long passing by and then all of a sudden the baby's gone.
And then my last one is, once again, the police aren't involved in the investigation. It's the journalist who's like, we need to look into this and find out what's going on, and somehow it has access to everything, is able to get into everywhere. I mean, there is the sheriff. He is involved a bit, but almost in a stop investigating, don't worry, we've got this kind of way, but we don't see him doing anything to look into it whatsoever.
No, it would have been a little bit more interesting if there was something beforehand that showed the corporations paying off the cops or something to that
like
effect,
that,
where there was a reason he didn't want to investigate, but there isn't. He's just a lazy cop, it seems, which is another trope, is cops are always portrayed as imbeciles in a lot of these films, right? And the only person that can get to the bottom of this is some random rogue reporter that gets access to absolutely everything. And you're right, that was annoying too. I had actually written that down over. I just didn't write it in the final tropes notes of mine, but that was one of mine as well.
Well, and it's annoying because, like, again, this is a ripoff of Jaws, but in Jaws it's a tourist town, and so we understand they can't close the beach because it'll crush the economy of the town.
Right.
This film doesn't establish any reason for any of this to keep going or for the investigation not to be had.
In fact, later on, like near the end of the movie, they have that big sailboat competition.
Yeah.
The reporter comes in. It's one of the last parts that he's in, I think.
Yeah.
And he says, we got to get those kids back. And the cop says, oh my God, they're still out there? Yeah. It's still going on? It's, guy, isn't it your job to know what's happening?
Well, there is a line there where they're talking about the 30 kilometer exclusion zone or whatever.
Right.
Did it reach far enough for the regatta? And it's like, no, well, we need to extend it.
Yeah.
So there was some care and concern, but that's the only time you see it from the police.
Yeah. And the other stupid thing is the Coast Guard comes around in a helicopter with a sign that says, turn back. And they're in a sailboat.
Yeah.
This guy's, I don't know how you read that. Yeah. I don't know how you can see that from the water.
Well, I love the Coast Guard's there to turn them around and then flies off. And then everyone gets attacked by the octopus. Oh.
And everyone gets attacked by the octopus. It's, but you don't see it.
Yeah, you just see people falling out of their boats.
They fall out of their boat, and then in the next scene, they're all gone.
Yeah.
So you just assume he ate everybody?
And then they all get off the Coast Guard boat, except for, is it Tommy?
Yes, the one kid.
One fatality.
Yeah.
But it's funny because like he's the only one that didn't fall out of their boat.
Yeah, but we saw the octopus pretty much engulf that boat, right? He just ate the whole thing.
But everyone else falls into the water.
Yes, we should probably give you some context here because if you haven't seen the film.
There's a sailboat regatta race that the investigative journalist's sister's son has entered.
That's already confusing.
The journalist's sister, played by Shelley Winters, in a horrible role. Her son enters a race with his friend. And I mean, other people in the race are adults, even though they keep saying it's kids out there. Yeah. And they start this regatta after the attacks have been happening and all that. Coast Guard comes. And then in the scene, everyone falls out of their boat except for the friend, Tommy. And he's the only one that gets taken.
Tommy's the one that gets bit. Yeah.
The octopus ignores all the other fresh meat in the water.
Yeah. Just that one kid.
Just the one kid.
So we're going to move on to one-liners. I had a few for these. They just kept coming up for me. My first one, these scuba divers are talking about they're going down to do some investigation and they're just having this banter and this guy says, why don't we just go to Mexico with those two broads? The conversation they're having like it has nothing to do with what they're about to do.
Right.
And then he just throws this out there. I just thought it was kind of weirdly out of place. And it's just, okay. I didn't know this was an option that you got. Where were these girls? Like he mentions with those two broads, like he mentions the women like we know who they are.
Yeah.
And okay. I just thought it was funny. So I put that one down.
That is good.
Oh, I have another one. This other one was said by the investigatory journalist. He says, behind every great fortune is a crime.
Oh, yeah.
So I took that one. I thought that one was pretty.
So profound.
Golden. Yeah.
My first line is just at the very beginning and reading it now, I'm just like, this isn't much, but it's when the mother leaves the baby by the water's edge and then crosses the street and the friend's like, how's the little fatso? I understand like she's trying to say like it's a term of endearment, but it comes across as like you got a fat kid.
Yeah, just kind of mean.
A little judgy. Yeah. So I thought that was quite good. And then of course then it also draws the audience attention to where is the baby?
Yeah. Oh no. And she turns around and it's gone.
It's gone. My next line is once the two boys have entered the regatta, they're sitting at actually there's a few good lines in this moment, but there's only one that I wrote down. They're sitting at a sort of dockside cafe eating dessert or having treats and talking about the race. And Shelley Winter's character is talking about like, oh, I was a great sailor. I'm a great sailor. If I was in your boat, you would definitely win. And she's a larger woman.
Yeah.
And her son says, then we'd need a tornado to move the boat.
Yeah. There's some fat shaming going on in this film. Yeah.
And then, I don't know, do you have any lines from that scene? Because there's something else.
I do have, I'll say that one right now, because I think you were heading up to it. It's, mommy, you're plump. There's just so much more of you to love, is the other one that...
Oh, that's not the one I was thinking of. That was good too. Like, he was almost like, I'm in trouble. I need to save this somehow.
I know. It almost makes it worse. Oh, you're just plump. It's very much along the line, more cushion for the pushing, like anything like that. And her son is saying this.
Just like a husband to a wife. Like, no, baby, you're not fat. You've got more personality. In the same scene, the friend, Tommy, leans over and whispers in Shelley Winter's ear. And she's like, what? Again? You just went.
Oh, yes.
They focus on how much this kid is pissing.
I know.
It's like, he pisses more than anyone else. Yeah, I've ever seen.
There's a scene, like not a whole scene, but a section of that scene dedicated to commenting on this boy's
bladder.
Bathroom.
I'm watching that going like, why are we even having this conversation? It must come back. There
right.
must be a reason. Like, there's a lot of this movie that could be cut out and make it shorter.
Yeah.
So I'm like, well, there must be a reason for this. No.
No reason.
Just bad comedy effect.
And again, like, he could have had the kid go to the bathroom before the tournament started, yeah. and then maybe he didn't get on the boat, or he was behind, which is why he got killed by the octopus.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
No. But no, we don't see anything. I had another one. It's with her again. She says, it's against my principles to spend so much money on children.
Yeah. It's a $5 entry fee for the regatta.
Yes.
It's against her principles.
It's against my principles to spend so much money on children.
Her
wow.
child.
You've got one child and you're not going to spend $5 to put him into the sailing competition that he really wants to go in. Yeah. It's pretty wild. Okay. Did you have any other one-liners, Mike, or does that wrap that up?
The only other thing I can think of, because I don't have them written down, though, but just to give the audience an idea of what this woman, like, how to see her in your mind, picture Blanche DuBois from The Golden Girls.
Oh, perfect, yeah.
Because she's an older woman, but almost all of her conversations somehow get back to her Italian ex-husband and the amount of lovers she's has and had.
Right.
And, like, the loving that she gets. It's just... Yeah, I was like, oh, he must have stolen from the Golden Girls. I'm like, wait, no, this is pre-Golden Girls. They stole from him, question mark.
Yeah, that's another comment I made in just my first impressions was she is staying with her brother, who is the reporter. Mm-hmm. And I just thought that relationship was weird.
Oh, yeah.
Because she comes in and automatically starts talking about how... did she get laid last night or something like
yeah.
that? Because he says, oh, who are you seducing this time? And she yeah. says, oh, don't worry about it. Do you want a Bloody Mary? And then she goes to mix this gross looking Bloody Mary. I even made a note, said that looks like dog shit. Like, she's gonna sit there and drink it. And then she flops it around like it's just this, oh man, it's just crazy. But I love how he said, oh, it's too early or it's too late or something to that effect. And she goes to the bar and sees that he's already been into the Jack Daniels. They're both in their nightshirts. It's like 9 a.m. These guys are pounding booze.
Well, and he's got like a 1920s, like, was the night before Christmas.
Oh, it's
like
full on down to his ankles, right? This night dress that he's wearing, and she's in the same thing. They're just talking in their jammies, drinking booze.
Yeah.
And just a weird relationship for brother and sister, I thought. Yeah.
Well, they even play it weird, where I thought, like, okay, they're a married couple until the seducing comments. Because,
yes.
Like, the physicality and the affection between them played like married.
It really did. I thought they were together at first until she mentioned that he was the brother.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, okay.
Bit odd.
It's like that Friends episode where she's taking a bath with the brother and stuff like that. It's just weird stuff.
Yeah.
All right. On that note, we're going to move on. We're going to go to what doesn't hold up. Mike, you're going to kick us off.
Oh, yeah. So my first one out the gate, it's more... doesn't hold up / a bit of nostalgia. I was born in 78, so I was sort of the time of this comment I'm making. And at the beginning of the film, when the mother's sitting with the baby, she takes out her lipstick and, like, applies her lipstick and, like, freshens it up. And it just pushed me back to, like, when I was a kid and I'd be out with my mom and her friends and, like, they'd be having lunch and then they'd have to put on their lipstick afterwards, or, like, my great aunt would always be, like, freshening up her lipstick.
Oh, yeah, okay.
All the time. And you just don't see that anymore. I'm not saying, like, oh, no. I want to harken back to a time where women have to wear makeup. That's not the message I'm sending out.
You bastard.
We're not that kind of podcast. Yeah. It was just a brief flash to, like, a time of my youth, and it doesn't hold up because you don't see that in films anymore. It's not part of the culture anymore.
Right.
But it was just a moment that I was like, kind of good memories.
Yeah.
Came out of that. Yeah.
Interesting.
And then my next one just doesn't hold up. And we've talked about this already. It's just every character is derivative of Jaws.
Right.
Like, they've got a poorly constructed mirror version of Brody. They've got a poorly constructed character of Richard Dreyfuss. And then the captain, they even try to give Will Gleason a moving speech where he's talking about the training of the orcas to mirror the USS Indianapolis sinking.
Oh, what a poor comparison. Like one of the most famous monologues ever done to this guy talking about how he trained these orcas, which is just like almost you could fall asleep through and not care.
I think I might have. So that was my doesn't hold up is just, I mean, going into this knowing the year, obviously I would have known that it was of the Jaws ilk.
Right.
But maybe if you'd never seen Jaws, you wouldn't get that. But it just, you can't not make that comparison.
Yeah. I had a couple that didn't hold up. The first was the joke that the deputy made when they found the first dead body, which was a reference to Buck Rogers. And he's talking about the corporation and doing their drilling. And he's like, they're using stuff that Buck Rogers couldn't invent. Nobody would know who Buck Rogers, what that series was or anything at this time. So that reference would just fall flat on anybody who's watching it today. I barely saw Buck Rogers when I was a kid. I think I saw like one or two episodes or something. It was well off the air by that time. We were into reruns or something like that when I watched it. But
the only reason I know Buck Rogers is because of the Warner Brothers cartoon with Daffy Duck's Duck Wodges of the 21st and a half century. Hey, like that's the only reason I know that there was a Buck Rogers.
Before, another one that doesn't hold up, I thought was, and this is kind of petty, but it's riding in the back of trucks and one of the kids is riding on the tailgate. Like they're not in the cab at all. They're just, hey, let's go. And they hop on, they're towing this sailboat and they're riding in the back of the trucks. Now, when I was a kid, you could do that around town. Nowadays, not so much, right? Like you just can't do that. And I guess as we talked before, probably all the, like the little fat jokes and stuff, they even make another fat joke to the guy.
Oh yeah.
Later on, and they're like, don't worry, we'll get you back in time for breakfast or whatever. And they really lay it on thick.
Well, even Will Gleason's wife is like, you should go for a swim. You need it.
Yeah. And he says, the fat guy in the boat, I can't remember his character's name. It's not important because he dies pretty quick.
Yeah.
But he just says, nobody wants to be with the fat guy. And then he jumps in and proceeds to swim like a 2-year-old.
Yeah. But he goes pretty far.
He goes fast and far. And his form is just messed up, but man, does he work hard to get to where he is.
Then he swims silently up behind the other guy to scare him.
That's right. Yeah. So those were my doesn't hold up. Did you have any more? Or?
I've got a few more.
Okay, go ahead.
And this one, I mean, it could have been back in my first impressions, but the atmosphere of the film. And I did mention, like, it feels like it's more of a Magnum PI episode or one of the a drama of that era, almost Murder, She Wrote-esque as well. Like, just everything's well lit, bright colored, clean, and safe. This movie, at no time, other than once, I think, and that's my test of time, but at no time does this movie use its score properly or use camera angles properly to establish any kind of tension in its audience. So the atmosphere just reads like an afternoon movie with killing monsters thrown in.
Right.
There's another one just, and I think it's even Henry Fonda himself that makes these mistakes, but he flubs a couple lines where you can tell, like, I don't know if they were just like, oh, it sounds more natural when he makes a mistake in the line or not, or it was just unintentional, but they left it in because they could only do one take. Like maybe Henry Fonda was only on set for a day, who knows?
Right.
But like the line I wrote down was, you better get yourself a good lawyer or your career may be over.
Oh yeah.
So why wouldn't they just cut and retake that? But no, they've left it in, or it's dubbed as well. So they could have just in the dubbing studio been like, can we take that again, Henry?
Yeah.
And this is, you know, Henry Fonda, Oscar winning actor.
I know, right? Yeah.
Although there's a number of Oscar winners in this.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I don't know if they thought if their agent was everybody needs to do a horror film or this must have been very early in their careers, but not the journalist like that. He's later on in his career, right?
Yeah, so. He won later for directing and script screenwriting. Yeah, he didn't win for acting. Shelley Winters won. I can't remember for what, though. It wasn't Lolita, I don't think. Or maybe it was.
I remember her in Pete's Dragon, the old Disney one, the musical.
Yeah.
That was, she was the foster mom that was hunting down Pete. So, I remember I was watching it and I was like, I've seen her before. Mm-hmm. I've seen her before in something. And there it was. Yeah, that's the one I had seen, right?
Yeah.
I didn't see Lolita, but.
Yeah, Lolita and Poseidon Adventure were the two I wrote down for like noticeable things she did.
I haven't seen Poseidon Adventure, but yeah.
And I'll just, you know what? I'm just going to, we've already talked about a couple of other ones, but I'm just going to jump to this one.
Okay.
The destruction of the coral reef towards the end when the divers are hunting for the octopus.
Oh, yeah. And it all falls.
It all just falls. Like, at the time, we didn't understand what coral, or maybe they didn't, I didn't know, but coral reefs were living things. They need to be protected. They're important to the,
right,
to the ocean. So just to see the amount that they just shoved over, because you know that they weren't taking the time to construct fake reefs and doing this in a pool. Like, this was legitimate, just like, let's break this shit apart and
destroy this. Yeah.
So that was a bit uncomfortable to watch. And that hunt actually just went on way too long.
Yes.
Way too long.
In one of my notes, I said this movie could have been about 20 or 30 minutes shorter.
Yeah.
It could have been an hour long, as opposed to what was the running time? An hour 42 minutes. This could have come in at, I'd say, an hour. I think you could have cut even 40 minutes out of this. There was a lot of long pauses, those still shots that were later on.
Like, yeah.
I didn't understand those at all. When they're doing the sailboat race, they all of a sudden transition into these stills, and they just show these still shots of the race and things that are going on. I was just confused. I was like, I don't understand. It doesn't add really anything. No. It's not like...
Like, I was wondering, are they trying to show like, oh, look at the action, so intense, we need to freeze to show you what's going on? But it wasn't even that.
I didn't get it. So they showed that. That took me, again, right out of the film. So yeah. Okay, so that will end our what doesn't hold up category. We're going to move into most gratuitous scene, and I'm going to kick this one off. I thought the most gratuitous scene was, again, it was kind of a copy of Jaws. It's the scene with the first dead body that pops out of the water by the dock. And it actually got me as far as a jump scare. Mm-hmm. I jumped. I was like, whoa. And to me, best part of the film. Like, I jumped. I was legitimately, the makeup wasn't bad, but they also didn't focus on it too long. So it just kind of quickly got bang and then done. And so I thought that one was probably the best thing that they did in this film.
That was my only test of time.
Oh, yeah?
Only because of the jump scare.
Yeah.
Just because it had been, I don't know, such a poor movie. So, and it, like, there was no music warning you that something was going to happen. And yeah, like, that corpse just whoop.
Yeah.
Like, similar, but again, there's the jump scare in Jaws with the fisherman's body underwater. Which
still holds up,
So I think they're just like, ooh, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do that one, yeah. But the makeup was good and it looked gross. That's why I put it as most gratuitous. It will be my test of time as well, because it was, in fact, the best part of the film.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
For me, for gratuitous, it was, I guess I have to give context to this. When the film first started, I had it written down that it was Ovidio G. Asinitis' film, but then a different name showed up as the director, and I can't remember what the name was. And so I was worried that I had the wrong film. And I was like, I'm watching the wrong movie. So then I had to stop it, and I was doing some research, and then I saw that for the American audiences, they gave the director an American name just to hopefully make people come see it. Like, it's some Greek guy, I don't want to see it. I don't know. And so when I was doing the research, the one website I was reading said that the octopus at the end was alive when the hand puppets of the orcas were ripping it apart.
What?
Yeah. So when that's what I read, and I was like, oh my God, like, that is just wrong. Like, anytime an animal's killed in a movie for entertainment of people is bad.
Yeah.
But the more we know about octopodes, the more we know, like, that's the torture of an intelligent animal. So watching that scene at the end where these hand puppets are just reaching in and like gnawing at it and tearing off tentacles and ripping off flesh, I was like, Jesus Christ, this is bad. When I went to do research later, multiple websites said that it was bought from a seafood market that morning, and so it was already dead.
Oh, okay. So
I was like, oh, thank God. So my most gratuitous scene is in the context of thinking that was a live animal.
Right.
Was over the top.
I actually had one more. It was the joke one that I was going to say at first. It's the foreman of the company, Corey, when he goes to meet the big CEO or his shirt.
Oh, I didn't catch it.
Oh my God. It is gold. It is patterned and it is amazing.
Oh, is it like Larry from Three's Company level?
Yes. It's got the big butterfly collar.
Oh, nice.
He walked in and I just, whoa. Just the loudest shirt. It takes up the whole scene. It is so good. So Corey's shirt is definitely most gratuitous for me. You're all empathetic with the animals, and I'm like, man, his clothes were...
Well, I mean, we could go with, you know, John Huston or Ned Turner, his cigar smoking.
Oh, yeah, that's, yeah.
Through the whole film, he's got a cigar.
He does, yeah. That wraps that category up. We're going to move into Stood the Test of Time. And Mike has that one. We've kind of already talked about it, but go ahead, Mike.
It is the rotting corpse jump scare. The moments leading up to it are hilarious. It's like this couple in a boat, I think, or on a dock.
They're on a dock.
Yeah. Just like talking about kissing and like, I'll kiss you, but none of that tongue stuff.
Yeah.
And the girl just like attacks him. He's like, ah, no, girl, yeah, it's not like that. Like,
you're never going to get anybody like that. And she just manhandles this guy on this boat. And what cues is he drops his fishing rod into the water, and you think that the octopus is going to grab him because they lead up to that. They show the point of view shot, yeah, and he reaches down, and then this corpse jumps up and they scream. But yeah, you're right. That scene is laughable. She's in that red bikini with her little pigtails, yeah, and she just destroys this dude.
One website called her Bad Kissing Bertha.
Not like that. Yeah. All right. We're going to go into eerie to ear splitting. My stuff mainly was the synthesizer. You heard it at the beginning of our podcast here. There it is. So every time the octopus is about to attack, they play that. And sometimes it's not that full section. It's just that beginning. And that's it. And they play it over and over and over again. And it's just, obviously, they're trying to do it. Yeah. They're trying to build that, but it's just so bad.
The Jaws is in the minor key, like dun, dun,
the slow, saddest of all deep, keys. Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Whereas you've got this like. Dun, 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 dun.
It's like, oh my gosh, it's not menacing at all. It's just crazy bad. So every time I heard it, I was, and then you know the octopus is coming, and then you know something's going to happen. And like Jaws did it in a way that freaked you out, and you were actually scared for the people that were in that scene. And dun, 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 you're like, oh no, here he comes, here he comes. This, you're just like, oh, the octopus is coming.
Well, it's too lighthearted. It's just too lighthearted. And that's where my next, like, I was going to talk about the organ sting. But the other thing that I wrote down right away was the opening track, which is, if you can find it, San Diego Yellow Cab by Stelvio Cipriani. And Stelvio Cipriani was the composer of the score of the film. And I got to be honest, if I wasn't going into a horror film, that opening track was a great song. It had a good little catchy repetitive motif. And I'm like, this is a good, almost like disco track straight out of the 1970s. And then you had the radio chatter of the taxi dispatcher going on ahead of it. And I'm like, I honestly thought like that would be a great opening to Taxi Driver itself, like just or a film about a taxi company and whatever. Like, I'm like, this is a great opening shot and opening sequence. But then the song itself and that whole sequence, it sets the tone for the whole film because the rest of the film is still sort of off on a tangent. It doesn't.
Yeah.
The music never hits. It never does what it's trying to do. And
neither does the film.
Yeah. So with the opening track, and we've had this with a few others, like Bird with a Crystal Plumage, the opening track by Marricone, it still doesn't quite match that you're coming into a horror film as well.
Right.
But this one just, it's too off center. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they extend it when the octopus is fighting, when he's on the screen longer. They extend the music, and then it just doesn't do it for me. I was going to mention also for Gratuitous, there's the time where we're never quite sure, like we know this octopus is large, but we're never quite sure how big it is because the scale of the octopus changes throughout the film. They obviously had this puppet head that they had going through the water. But then there's this one scene where the wave is just absolutely immense. Yeah. It's crazy big. And I thought, well, that's a little different than any other time we've seen this octopus attack. Yeah. And so that was just weird. The scale of the octopus was really different.
And then there's scenes where it attacks a boat and it looks not small, but, you know, comparatively small, where it's like, oh, it's this smaller thing that can sort of maneuver around.
Yeah.
But when it goes for the sailboat with Tommy on it, it didn't, like you said, it comes up from the bottom and envelops the whole thing in its tentacles, and its entire sort of body section covers the entire boat.
Yeah.
And when it's fighting with the orcas, it's not like it's much smaller. And like orcas are big animals, but if it can take up that whole sailboat, it should be much larger than a head of an orca, but it looked like it wasn't that much bigger.
No, it didn't. And the orcas, even when they're trying, like they tried to make them small in that last scene when they're attacking them.
Well, they
look
puppets, right?
Yes. And they look they look just so small compared to this octopus. And it's just, okay. Again, the scale is off, right? Yeah. So when the arm grabs the woman and holds her up, you think, oh my gosh, this thing is huge. And then in the next scene, you watch it as it swims through the water. You're just like, well, that's just a you know, slightly larger octopus. Yeah. So I went on a tangent there, but that was, we got off the eerie to ear splitting, but the audio just overall, just as Mike said, to wrap it up is, it just misses the mark. Okay. Back it up moments. I had one, Mike had one. Go ahead, Mike.
I really struggled to find one, and I liked it just because it was kind of an eerie moment that had it been done right, or if I'd have come across it, I'd have been like, what the fuck? Get out of here. And it's when the two divers are checking the cables and looking at the instruments for the tunnel developers.
Oh, yeah.
And they come across a scene where there's all these dead fish pointing straight down at the ocean floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I was just like, ooh, that is creepy. It is weird. It almost doesn't fit with the rest of the movie because it worked well. But yeah, that's why it was my back it up. It's not the entire swim because, like I said, that just goes on way too long.
Oh, forever. Yeah, yeah.
But no, that 10-second clip is my back it up moment in an hour and 42-minute film.
Yeah. Mine, again, was the corpse. I thought that was the best scene of the film. I agree. The one with the fish, it is creepy. It's actually one of the scenes, so I guess maybe there's two scenes that work, that little snippet and then the corpse scene.
Yeah.
Because when they are swimming through there, it could have been darker. Mm-hmm. Like, it was quite bright when they're in there. It's like, they're always swimming in the daytime.
Right.
And it would have been nice if it was a little darker, like in Jaws, when he goes swimming at night, mm-hmm. right? That's when he finds the corpse and it's all dark and you can't see anything. And it's only because of the flashlight you see that. It would have been really cool if they had it really dark and it was just flashlights that showed those fish as he's kind of going through the graveyard there.
They might not have had the ability to either film at night or drop it down in post.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're going to go into our bonus features. These are things we investigated about the film. The first thing that I saw was that it was a budget of $750,000.
Yeah.
And at the box office, it made $3 million. So it did all right for its budget, despite the fact that it's got 0% on Rotten Tomatoes. And it didn't quite do that bad on IMDb. I believe it got 3.7 on the IMDb website. So it got something. But I would imagine the people that went to see it and made it $3 million was strictly on the star power in this film. There were a lot of big names that acted in this film. And then probably when you went and saw it, you're just, oh, Lord.
Well, and there's probably some cachet from, you know, this summer's Jaws starring these people, but also, you know, Jaws was the first summer blockbuster. So then to have to have the next trailer, it's like this summer's Jaws or this year's Jaws. Like, oh, well, I'll go see it. Like, we're like, Hereditary was the Exorcist of its time.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So they still market that way. So people might have gone just on that.
True.
And then word didn't get around fast enough so that others stopped
going.
They
didn't have the internet. So people were just like, wow, okay, let's go see this. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you have any bonus features?
A lot of mine were just almost quotes from reviews. I didn't get a lot of sort of information. The one that I did find, and it doesn't quite jive with the budget. And funnily, in the same article, it mentions the $750,000 budget, the $3 million profit or $3 million at the box office. But it does say that prior to filming, they spent $1 million on a life-size replica of the octopus.
Right. Yeah.
I found that too. Promptly sank when they put it in the water. Oh my God, it just makes so much sense. And then I was like, Spielberg had trouble with Bruce.
Yeah.
But then he worked around it very well.
Yes.
Asinitis did not work around the failure.
There was one scene that I thought was kind of cool was when the octopus, his arm came out and grabbed the wife. Mm. Once he lifted her up, it was bad. But when it came out and actually grabbed her, I didn't mind that scene.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, they must have got like a real puppet for it. But that's funny that just promptly sank. It's like, all right, we're going to get ready. And they set it in the water. Okay. Guess that's done.
The investors in the film, like, this is Samuel Zed Arkoff again, just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. Yeah. Why would anybody, especially after hearing all the horror stories that Spielberg went through, like, why would anybody want to do something on the water again?
Yeah.
I have one. This is kind of a goof. It's kind of funny because although the title of the film is Tentacles and it's about a murderous giant octopus, octopus don't have tentacles. They have arms. And scientifically, the definition of a tentacle is commonly accepted as an elongated structure with suckers at the very tip. A squid normally has two tentacles along with many arms, but octopus do not have tentacles. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, this film is mistitled.
Yes.
I'm just going to read a couple of the lines from the reviews that I quite liked.
Yeah, go ahead.
Scriptophobic said, Shelley Winters is relegated to comic relief and her scenes are nigh impossible to make it through.
Yeah.
So I like that one. Movie John, talking about the Blu-ray re-release that came out a few years ago. The promotional art used on the sleeve is fun. I might even be inclined to say it's more interesting than the film itself. And then my last one from Horror Geek Life. Talking about this film is like all the potential of what it could have been. It's like, but what we got was a slice of summer cheese left in the sun for too long and covered in sand.
Oh, awesome. I like that one. That's gold.
Yeah. So that's all I got for research. I almost felt like the reviewers were just like trying to one up each other on like, what comedic line can I use for this?
Yeah. I found another couple of tidbits here that I'll say. The trailer was narrated by Percy Rodriguez, and the movie was sold as an alternate take on Jaws, and bringing in Rodriguez, most famous for narrating all the Jaws trailers, was part of the campaign. So they really wanted to like capitalize on Jaws, their fame. Also, Henry Fonda filmed his scenes in one day.
Okay, so he was there one day.
Yeah, and Fonda had just had a pacemaker fitted and couldn't do anything too strenuous, and all his scenes are fairly static, mostly him talking on the telephone.
And yet he's one of the better actors in the film.
And yet he does the best job. Oh, one of the things that I wanted to mention that I didn't mention it, and I think this goes to most gratuitous, was the assistant, always in jorts and shirtless.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Everybody who works around the water in here is in jean shorts and shirtless or a cotton tee. Like they're in the worst stuff to be around the water in. Nothing dries, and they're all wearing the same stuff. I thought it was pretty funny. Okay, so do you have any more bonus features?
No, that is everything.
I think that wraps it up for me as well. So we're going to go into our watchability scale. Mike, out of 10, what would you give this for your watchability?
I got to throw it down at the 1.
Okay.
Yeah, the lack of back it ups and test of times, just there's not much point in seeking it out and looking for it.
Right.
Yeah.
I was a little more generous. I gave it a 2.
2?
Okay. Yeah, I just thought there were some laughable parts, but I agree. I wouldn't go out of my way to see this film. It misses the mark in a lot of spots. If you want to laugh, maybe don't watch it by yourself.
Yeah.
Make sure you got some buddies around or something so you can just chat during the downtime. And there's a lot of downtime in this film.
You know what? I think I will give it. I'll go 2, just because looking at what we've given the 1s to on our website where you can find our watchability scale, this wasn't as painful to watch as some of those. So yeah, I'll give it up to a 2.
All right, good. So that ends our review of Tentacles, named poorly, but I guess you don't get the same effect if you call it Arms. So you had to go with something there. So thank you very much for listening to us. Be sure to check us out on our social media pages. Instagram, we are at ScreamStreamPod. Stop by our website, www.screamsandstreams.com, where we have information about our episodes, descriptions of our categories, links to our research, our watchability scale, and our suggestion page where you can recommend movies that you think we should talk about. Please subscribe to, rate, and comment on our shows on any of the platforms where you get your podcasts. Until next time, this has been Chad and
Mike.
Thank you very much. Scare you later.